The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, the HGTV Garden e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, and maybe from Carrots Love Tomatoes and Roses Love Garlic by Louise Riot. We'll start with the Garden Smart e-newsletter. Year of the Dahlia. Dahlia is a genus of tuberous plants related to daisies and zinnias. There are many species and hybrids of dahlia in a range of colors and forms. Each flower can be small or large, ranging from 2 inches in diameter up to 15 inches. The largest form is informally known as a dinner plate dahlia. The native dahlias found in the mountains of Mexico and Guatemala are the genetic source for the modern hybrid dahlias we grow today. While busy conquering the Aztec nation, 16th century Spanish conquistadors pursued numerous side explorations that led to the discovery of the New World plant life. About 200 years passed before dahlia seeds, roots, and plants found their way to Spain and other parts of Europe. Dahlia is a genus of tuberous plants that are members of the Asteraceae or Compositae family. Related species include sunflower, daisy, chrysanthemum, and zinnia. There are many species of dahlia in a range of colors and forms, with hybrids commonly grown as garden plants. The flower varies in size and form. The largest, known as dinner plate dahlia. There are several ways to enjoy your first dahlia. Most garden centers, home improvement centers, stores, and mail order sources sell dahlia tuberous roots, a thick underground stem or rhizome, as well as blooming potted plants. This root looks like a sweet potato that grows under the soil surface and sends up strong stems. Additionally, almost every dahlia society has sales, and they welcome guests to those events. Your tuberous root can go directly into the ground in the spring when the ground is warm and there is little chance of frost. One good guideline is to plant at the same time as you would a tomato. If you want blooms as early as possible, you can start them indoors in good light about a month before planting time. Starting early, you could have a small plant ready to transplant at planting time. Dahlias require a site with good drainage and partial to full sun. Monoculture and combination containers are also an increasingly popular way to grow dahlias. Most dahlias need to be staked to avoid falling over at maturity. Best practice is placing the stake prior to planting to avoid damaging the roots. Tomato cages can also be a simple approach to staking. Plant according to the package directions with the eye on the tuber facing up. The eye is the point on the shoulder or crown of the tuber from which the plant grows. If you're buying potted plant dahlias, simply transplant into a prepared garden bed or decorative containers. Small dahlia plants are susceptible to slug damage. It's a good idea to manually remove slugs or protect plants with a commercial slug killer. Japanese beetles seem to enjoy dahlia blooms just when they are ready for a bouquet. One of the best methods of control is to manually remove the beetles and drop them into a bucket of soapy water. If other insects, such as earwigs, thrips, or aphids become a problem and you want your blooms to be perfect, then you might want to consider using an insecticidal soap or a commercial pesticide. Follow label directions carefully when using any pesticide. Deer problem? Dahlias are low on the deer's list of favorite foods. While dahlias are not deer-proof, they are deer resistant. Dahlias do not need a lot of water. In fact, excessive watering early in the season can lead to rotting. Best practice is to monitor the soil's moisture, especially if the local rainfall is less than 1 inch per week. In containers, dahlias will require more water because of their limited soil volume. Dahlias will generally benefit from regular treatments with a water-soluble or granular fertilizer. Traditional wisdom for dahlias is to treat with a high nitrogen fertilizer early in the season and then transition to a bloom-type fertilizer, lower nitrogen and higher in potassium and potash, in the middle part of the season. You should stop fertilizing later in the season or about the 1st of September. And from HGTV Gardens e-newsletter, 10 Bulletproof Plants You Can Grow These Things by Karen Buellen. Don't have a green thumb? We're certain that even you can get these plants to grow. Butterfly Bush Blue Chip, zones 5 to 9. Buddleias are easy care plants, but they're invasive in some areas. Look for sterile cultivars, Blue Chip, and Purple Haze, which do not set seed and therefore don't run wild. They're shorter and more compact, and because they're sterile, they have a much longer flowering season. Staten says, get them going in the garden and they'll quietly take care of themselves. Flower Carpet Ground Cover Rose, zones 5 to 10. If you've skipped growing roses because the very thought of pruning and fighting leaf spot makes you too tired to go outside, your dreams have come true. Flower carpet roses are a ground cover alternative to fussier rose varieties. Disease resistant, drought tolerant, and unintimidating, they're guaranteed to come in a color you love. There's no special way to prune them, Staden says. Even if you take a pair of shears to them in the middle of the growing season, you'll have new buds in 20 to 25 days. Katrina African Iris, Nola Alba, zones 8 through 11. African Iris is a true beauty, but one that gives gardeners fits because it tends to succumb to crown rot in areas with high humidity and heavy soils. Until there was Katrina, that is, an exotic-looking variety that tolerates these problems gracefully and flowers over a very long season. The clean bloom outlines and strappy foliage fit well in both traditional and contemporary garden schemes. Itoh, I-T-O-H, Peony Kiko, K-E-I-K-O. Zones 4 through 9, Itoh peonies, which are crosses between herbaceous peonies and tree peonies, grow well over a wide range of climates and feature stunning foliage, giant blooms, and a bounty of available colors. I have come to be an enormous fan of them, says Nicholas Staten, the director of new plants for plant breeder Monrovia. The flowers are to die for. People think they're hard to grow, but it's absolutely not the case. Peonies outlive most of us. When you're pushing up daisies, your peonies will still be pushing up blooms. All they need is a good organic mulch, and you're off to the races. Bezia, B-E-E-S-I-A, zones 6 through 8. This ground cover grows about 18 inches high and is perfect for dappled shade. But its best attribute is its heart-shaped gunmetal blue foliage, which is offset by masses of snow-white flowers in spring. The color is just striking, Staten says. Plus, this plant is very easily maintained and not at all invasive. Red-flowered yucca, purpa, zones 5 through 10. This drought-tolerant favorite is a showstopper, shooting up 6-foot red flower spikes over succulent blue-gray foliage. This plant does fabulously well in high heat and is unbelievably hardy, Staten says. It establishes itself quickly and can double its size in a year. The new cultivar, Brake Lights, features blood-red blooms rather than the traditional coral red and attracts droves of hummingbirds and butterflies. Ivory Prince Hellebore Lenten Rose. Zones 4 through 9. More vigorous than other varieties of hellebore, the creamy blooms of Ivory Prince signal the end of winter in the woodland garden. What's more, the plant is practically problem-free. If you want a hellebore, this is the one to try because you will be successful with it, Staden says. It carries the day when it comes to hardiness. Midnight Blue Agapanthus, Lily of the Nile, Monmed, zones 6 through 10. If you've grown Agapanthus before, you may have been frustrated getting these lovely South African natives to flower consistently or to overwinter successfully. Many people give up, Staden says, but Midnight, spelled Midknight, Blue is different. If you live in hardiness zones 6 through 10, you will have success with this plant. It establishes itself well. It has a nice, deep, green, fleshy leaf, and the flower color is striking. It's the deepest blue of any Agapanthus. Balboa Sunset Trumpet Vine, Monbal, zones 4 through 11. This plant wants no babying, no extra fertilizer, no water, no love at all. I once heard the plants man, Michael Durr, say, "If you cannot grow campsis, you should go and sell shoes," Staden says. Leave this climber to its own devices near a trellis or fence, and it will reward you with vigorous growth and a bounty of trumpet-shaped red blooms. One area's vigorous vine is another area's invasive nightmare. Be sure to check with your local extension office before growing trumpet vine. Diablo Ninebark, Monio, zones 2 to 7. This is a classic, long-lived garden choice that's been around for many years, but many gardeners are still unfamiliar with it. Diablo, spelled D-I-A-B-O-L-O, is a great four-season plant, Staden says. She's got great reddish foliage and will set white flowers in late spring that will turn into berries you can make jellies from. When she loses her leaves, you've got amber-colored exfoliating bark to look at, and she is absolutely bulletproof. And from the Triangle Gardener magazine, for the birds. Question, what is that bird singing by my window at night? Answer, in the spring and early summer, a likely culprit is the male northern mockingbird who will sing at night while his mate is incubating eggs. He usually stops once the eggs are hatched. The reasons for the serenading aren't fully understood, but it may be related to pair bonding and territorial display. Bright lights could also be part of the cause by fooling the bird into thinking it's still daylight. Other night singers include the northern bobwhite and eastern screech owl, but their calls are less persistent than mockingbirds. Two other nocturnal singers are the whippoorwill and chuck-will's widow, both insect-eating members of the Nightjar family that sing at night to proclaim their territory and maintain pair bonds with a mate. Question: when is it safe to remove nests around buildings? Answer: most songbirds use the same nest only once and will build a new one before they lay eggs. Once chicks have hatched and left the nest, you can safely remove the nest and clean the site without fear of harming the birds. Some birds will nest more than once throughout spring and summer. By removing their nests once the young have fledged, you are increasing the likelihood of more nests being built around your property. There's a notable exception. The brown-headed nuthatch sometimes lays a second batch of eggs immediately after the first batch of babies leave the nest. If you've got a brown-headed nuthatch nest, wait until fall to remove it. Removing an active nest that has eggs or young is illegal because the birds are protected by federal law. The few exceptions are a handful of species that are not native to the U.S.: house sparrows, starlings, and pigeons. Question: why is a woodpecker pecking at my house and what can I do about it? Answer: male woodpeckers sometimes pound on chimneys, gutters, windows, shutters, and other hard surfaces as a way to advertise their turf to other woodpeckers. This behavior mostly occurs during courtship and nesting, and often takes place in mourning. If you notice physical damage to your home because of a woodpecker, it might rather be due to a woodpecker pursuing food. These insect eaters might be trying to extract carpenter bees, ants, or termites from your home. Territorial drumming from a woodpecker rarely results in damage to a home. How you react depends on which behavior the bird is displaying. If the bird is eating insects, the best remedy is to remove the food source and repair the damage. If the woodpecker's pecking is territorial, you can try draping plastic, aluminum foil, or netting over the area. Hanging pie pans and balloons may also help scare away the bird. Non-moving objects such as scarecrows may work at first, but birds quickly acclimate to these. And some events that are coming up: a daylily flower show and sale, June the 15th. Raleigh Daylily Club Juried Flower Show, open to the public. Registration, 8 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. The judging, 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Public viewing, 2 p.m. Daylily plant sale, 2. It'll happen at Crabtree Valley Mall, North Atrium, below the food court in Raleigh. And a pollinator festival, June the 15th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Games, crafts, activities, prizes, local experts, and food for all ages. And it's free at Lake Crabtree County Park in Morrisville. For more information, call 919-460-3355. 919-460-3355. And from HGTV's Gardens e-newsletter, Plants to Grow in Your Bathroom by Jessica Yonker. Fiddle leaf fig hails from the tropical rainforests of Africa and will make themselves right at home in a sunny bathroom. Shower frequently. They love the humidity. Orchid. Orchids need moist, well-draining soil and indirect light to thrive. We recommend growing these blooms in a bathroom with a window to encourage growth and reblooming. ZZ plant. It's hard to kill a ZZ plant. It thrives in low-light situations and only needs water when the soil is dry. Yellow, curling leaves indicate too much light. A ZZ plant will typically even do fine in a bathroom without a window. Moss. Moss can grow practically anywhere. We love an expansive living wall, but for a small-scale pop of green, decorate your bathroom with terrariums full of moss. Begonia. The bathroom is actually the perfect place to overwinter your begonias, and do not be afraid to keep some there year-round. Begonias love humidity and bright indirect light. Peace Lily. Peace Lily will be happy in a sunny bathroom next to a shower. Water deeply and allow it to dry out between waterings. You'll know it's thirsty when the leaves droop. Diffenbachia. Though the dumb came tolerates even extreme neglect, it grows best in indirect light with regular watering. It will thrive with light humidity from a shower, but isn't completely necessary, making it a good choice for a guest bathroom, too. The plant creates a sap that can be toxic if consumed, so keep it away from pets and children and wash hands after handling the leaves. Snake plant. Hardy snake plant can survive on low light and minimal water. As an added bonus, the plant is said to filter indoor air pollution. Think household cleaning products, making it a great choice for your bathroom. Air plants. Air plants are famous for being low maintenance. They don't even need soil. Don't forget to give the plants enough light. A bathroom with bright light is preferred. Give air plants a soak in a dish of water for 12 hours every 2 to 3 weeks. Philodendron is the kind of plant you'll have around for years. Even in less than ideal conditions, the vines twist toward any available light and can go for long periods between watering. Philodendrons will be at its glossiest in a bright, high-humidity bathroom. Try growing it from a hanging basket to save on counter space. Dracaena. These attractive plants grow best in low or medium light. Keep it near a shower where it can soak up humidity and make sure to keep it consistently watered to avoid brown leaves. Bromeliad. You'll find these tropical plants hanging out in hotel and restaurant lobbies, and with good reason. Bromeliads don't need frequent watering. When you do water them, pour the water into the plant's vase-like reservoir. Chinese evergreen. Sturdy but beautiful, Chinese evergreen tolerates just about any growing condition indoors. Leaves offer a variety of eye-catching patterns, and when there's bright enough light, these tough plants send up calla lily look-alike blooms. Lucky bamboo. A popular gift, lucky bamboo looks great on a bathroom countertop. Water sparingly and remove any yellowed leaves to keep it looking fresh. Ornamental peppers. Believe it or not, but if you are lucky enough to have a bathroom with a south-facing window, you should receive enough light to grow ornamental peppers. Make sure the plant does not dry out and keep the colorful peppers out of reach of curious children and pets. And from Carrots Love Tomatoes and Roses Love Garlic by Louise Riot. Here's some information about spinach. Because of its saponin content, spinach is a useful pre-crop and does well planted with strawberries. Squash. 2 or 3 icicle radishes planted in each hill will help prevent insects on squash as on cucumbers. Let the radishes grow and go to seed. Nasturtiums will repel squash bugs, and so will cigarette ash and other tobacco residue if placed with the seed when it's planted. Squash planted either earlier or later than usual often will escape insect damage. In Oklahoma, I find squash planted in midsummer is almost entirely insect-free. Early in the day, before the sun is strong, squash stink bugs are sluggish, and in the small garden may be picked off. There are also insect-resistant strains of squash. Sweet potatoes generally have high energy value, only peas and beans yielding more. They have a common enemy, the fungus disease or wilt called stem rot, which can be controlled with a disease-free seed and by rotating the crop. White hellebore controls a number of leaf-eating insects. Nematodes can be a problem, and some varieties have been bred with built-in resistance. If rabbits bother your sweet potato patch, spray with a diluted fish emulsion. Tomato. Tomatoes and all members of the brassica cabbage family repel each other and should be kept apart. Tomatoes also dislike potatoes and fennel. Tomatoes will protect asparagus against the asparagus beetle. Since they are tender plants, put tomatoes in during late spring after the early crop of asparagus spears has been harvested. Tomatoes protect gooseberries against insects. Tomatoes are compatible with chives, onion, parsley, marigold, nasturtium, and carrot. And for several years, I have planted garlic bulbs between my tomato plants to protect them from red spider mites. Stinging nettle growing nearby improves their keeping qualities, and red root pigweed in small quantities is also beneficial. Though not containing fungicidal elements, tomatoes will protect roses against black spot. The active principle of tomato leaves is solanine, a volatile alkaloid that at one time was used as an agricultural insecticide. To make a spray for roses, make a solution of tomato leaves in your vegetable juicer, adding 4 or 5 pints of water and 1 tablespoon of cornstarch. Strain and spray on roses where it is not convenient to plant tomatoes as companions. Keep any unused spray refrigerated. Root excretions of tomatoes have an inhibiting effect on young apricot trees, and do not plant tomatoes near corn, since the tomato fruit worm is identical to the corn earworm. Do not plant near potatoes either, since tomatoes render them more susceptible to potato blight. Tomatoes prefer to grow in the same place year after year. That's all right unless you have a disease problem, in which case plant your tomatoes in a new area. Give them ample quantities of compost or decomposed manure. Mulch and water in dry weather to maintain soil moisture and stave off wilt disease and blossom end rot, but never water tomatoes from the top. Water from below and water deeply. If you smoke, be sure to wash your hands thoroughly before you work in your garden, for tomatoes are susceptible to diseases transmitted through tobacco. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.